Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. And welcome to another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Coleman. Thank you so much for joining me. It's so nice to have you guys back again. I think I have an interesting book for you. I do want to apologize that I haven't done a review in a while, but as you may know, if you've listened to some of my other podcasts, I am a public school teacher by trade. So these last couple weeks, I was on vacation, kind of just enjoying the last of my summer before the school year starts. It starts for me next week. And so, you know, I thought I'd be able to get in one more book review to you before the calm before the storm, I guess you could say, when the school year starts. So the book that I'm going to be reviewing is called 10% Happier, How I Tame the Voice in My Head, Reduce Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Worked by Dan Harris. I should note that I did not read the book. I listened to the audiobook when I was on vacation with my wife and we were in New Zealand and we were taking a road trip around the country and we decided to listen to the audiobook while we were driving. So we both listened to it together, which was really nice because we were able to have some conversations and some other dialogue that really enhanced and made the stories that are in the book a lot more meaningful. I should probably also note, just for full disclosure, that I had also finished another book recently called The Great Courses, Practicing Mindfulness, which is kind of a similar take on somebody's journey through becoming a Buddhist, which is mostly what this book is about. There's a few small differences that I'll go over in a moment, but mostly that's what this book is about. It's about this guy who learned some of the practices of Buddhism, you know, now more formally called mindfulness, now that we have put more of a scientific emphasis on the whole practice of meditation and focus and so on and so forth. We've kind of secularized it into just the term of mindfulness, which is great because now we can package it in non-religious circles such as schools, which my school has been doing mindfulness now for a mindfulness program with the students in elementary and middle school for about the past 6 years. And so that's been really great. So that's mostly what this book is. Now, anybody who listens to my podcast probably knows that I wouldn't go so far as to call myself a Buddhist. I don't really know enough about it, to be honest with you. But I certainly have been, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, been trying to practice or incorporate some of the Buddhist practices into my life. I mean, that's certainly my dominant philosophy. So if I seem a little biased, if I seem as if I'm, you know, being a little overly congratulatory to these type of evaluations of modern Buddhism, I do apologize. It's just who I am. But my graduate school professors would be proud of me that I'm giving you full disclosure about my own personal biases. Okay. So as I mentioned before, let's go ahead and get to the book. This whole thing, Buddhism has kind of come into the spotlight with these the last few years. People have really begun gravitating towards Buddhism as a new way of living your life without necessarily the religious dogma that's associated with it. And apparently that's kind of angered the Dalai Lama, the leader of the Buddhists, in a lot of ways, because he feels as if Westerners have kind of, they view Buddhism as being something completely different than other religions, lacking that sort of metaphysical aspect. And that's sort of how I approach Buddhism. So I'm sorry, Mr. Dalai Lama, but that's kind of what I do as well. And that's important because in the book focuses on a man named Dan Harris. And if the name sounds familiar, he's a TV reporter. He he does a weekend show on Good Morning America, and he just kind of does spot coverage for NBC and World News and a few other organizations, I think. And what had happened, and the book is kind of part, it's part a journey through discovering Buddhism, and it's part of biography about how Dan Harris got started in the newscasting business, which I thought was fascinating because I haven't read too many books about people and their up-and-coming journeys into becoming an established television reporter. I know nothing. I see them all the time, and yet I know almost nothing about them. And so that was kind of nice to have somebody actually pull back the curtain a little bit to see how the inner workings of that whole business transpires. So what happened with Dan Harris is Dan Harris was a television reporter, very hungry, young, aggressive. He was very fortunate. He got a lot of early breaks and promotions early on. He said he was one of the youngest reporters at his network for a long time. He got to go to Iraq. He got to do news coverages in other third world countries. He was in Brazil covering like some drug lords. It's very fascinating some of the things that he did. So what he was saying is that apparently, I forget about how old he was, but maybe about 10 years ago or so, he was saying he actually experienced, he began using drugs after the Iraq war because he said it had left him really stressed out. And he was looking for other ways to self-medicate. And so he began using, you know, different forms of drugs. And after that happened, he experienced a panic attack while on air. He couldn't even get through his lines. And so he said at that point, he was kind of already looking for some sort of answer, some sort of philosophy or therapy to kind of help get himself focused. And so he started seeing a therapist, and he said that, you know, this therapist in a lot of ways was invaluable for helping him get his life and his life organized and getting his bearings straight with what he wanted to accomplish. But he was saying that the problem with therapy is that he didn't feel like he was learning a lot of skills in order to help himself improve as a person when he wasn't in therapy. And that's kind of where Buddhism is going to take off. But before we get to that point, it should be noted that Dan Harris is an atheist, as far as I can tell. That's certainly what he seems to profess in his book. Much like myself, he was raised in an atheist family. So it was kind of an interesting story. He was working with the late Peter Jennings, and Peter Jennings had asked him to start doing some exposés on different religions around the country. So he started doing interviews with evangelical Christians, with New Age philosophers, with Jewish rabbis, so on and so forth. But he didn't actually have any sort of personal belief set connected with any of them. But he would just interview them for the news story. Then he comes across this guy who I'd never heard of before this book, named Eckhart Tolle. And Eckhart Tolle is sort of a new age philosopher, I suppose. He's had a few bestsellers. He's German. He's very quiet, a bit reclusive. He doesn't really do a lot of interviews, but I guess he got discovered because he was put on because Oprah had found him, and Oprah had him on his show a few times, and she had been praising the virtues of his book. So this is important because apparently Oprah has like a minus touch when it comes to books. Anything that she touches, it turns to gold. So his book becomes very popular. And apparently he had one chapter that resonated really strongly with Dan Harris. And what the chapter was about is how our mind is mostly out of control if left unchecked. And it will give into negativity. It will give into hysteria, overambitious, fantasizing, and that we somehow need to disconnect ourselves or at least begin to control our wild minds. And Dan Harris said that resonated really strongly with him because he had been feeling a lot of those same things. And so this guy, it's kind of a funny moment because here's this guy who's been an atheist his whole life. He has been interviewing all sorts of people in all different religions. And the person who he winds up gravitating to is this bizarre New Age philosopher from Germany who, is a recluse. But he later finds out that what was in Tolle's chapter was mostly stories that are mostly philosophies that have just kind of been imported and packaged over from ancient Buddhist philosophy. And that's when he comes into contact with people like Deepak Chopra and other sort of people who've kind of taken Buddhism and they've tried to market it in a way that would make it seem like it's something new and different and exciting. And Dan Harris, you know, he comes to the conclusion that, you know, mostly these were just marketing schemes. He's really hard on Deepak Chopra. He thinks that Chopra is basically a fraud who comes up with these ideologies and philosophies that he doesn't even practice himself to sell his merchandise. And I've heard other people be similarly critical of Deepak Chopra. So what he winds up doing is he winds up coming into contact with, I want to say the guy's name was Goldstein, but apparently in New York, there's a group of middle-aged Jewish men who all in, the 70s, were all studying Buddhism. They were sort of like these American pioneers who had done some, I guess they'd done some travel abroads in Nepal, and they'd done some traveling abroad in China and other places, and they had done some intensive studying with Buddhism, and they had brought back some translations to the United States, and they kind of became the, the forerunners of American Buddhism, or at least its resurgence in America. And they were called the Jubus, short for the Jewish Buddhists. And so Dan Harris kind of gets involved with these people, and that's really when he begins to embrace Buddhism as this philosophy that can be incorporated into his daily life. Now here's where I really empathize with what Dan Harris is going through and some of the reasons that I have gravitated towards Buddhism in these last few years. Is Dan Harris thought that the psychological manifestations that were going on in his mind were completely unique to him. In other words, the things that he was thinking, these wild, irrational thoughts and fantasies and horrible predictions and all these other things, he thought that only he was having them, that like his mind was somehow twisted. And through learning about Buddhism and reading about Buddhism, he discovers that not only was it not unique to Dan Harris, that many other people are experiencing very similar habits of the mind, but it wasn't even really unique to the people of ancient Nepal 2,500 years ago. And apparently the Buddhists actually, some of the monks cataloged all the different ways that your mind can sort of run away with itself. And here are a couple of my favorite. One is called the comparing mind, and this is what the Buddhists say that people tend to do when they come into or when they learn about what other people are doing with their lives. Like, so for example, if somebody were to come up to me and say, "Oh, hey, did I tell you that I just got a new job as a principal of this school?" Now, my immediate reaction, I might externally say, "Oh, hey, congratulations, I'm proud of you." But in my mind, I'm actually starting to run through everything that I'm doing in my life. Am I being productive? Am I getting job promotions? Am I making more money? And so what we do is we kind of almost instinctively begin comparing ourselves to other people. And apparently, according to the Buddhists, this is really dangerous because if you're constantly in competition with other people, not only are you never actually going to be satisfied with your own life, but it's going to lead to kind of a destructive pattern where it's not only difficult to be happy with what you have, but it's really sort of difficult to be compassionate and happy for other people as well. And this is something that I have been experiencing pretty much all my life, and I feel embarrassed to even talk about it because I don't want people to think I'm some jealous, envious, hateful person, But as it turns out, like, lots of people have been going through this one. And the other one that I want to share with you, one of my other favorites, is this thing that the Buddhists refer to as monkey mind. And what the Buddha says is that your mind can be like a monkey sometimes, where monkeys are constantly jumping around and they're unable to focus on anything, and they just jump from one thing to another. And what he's saying is that when the monkeys, they like to point out everything that could possibly be going wrong in your life or that is going wrong in your life, and they're constantly warning you about all these bad things that could happen. And that's totally something that I have to deal with. I mean, for example, I'll get something as simple as an email from my principal saying, oh, hey, I need to talk to you next week about something. And immediately my monkey mind is trying to run through all the different things I've said or done to different people. Maybe I offended somebody, maybe a parent is unhappy with me, so on and so forth. So, you know, this is a great example of something that I thought was unique to what I was going through in life, but it's not unique at all. This is something that most people are probably going through and have been through for over a millennia. So what Dan Harris realizes is, and basically through learning about Buddhism, is that the only way you can really begin to control or get a better handle of the different aspects of how the mind can run away with itself is through the practice of meditation, where you just sit in silence and you keep redirecting your mind to the present moment. So the present moment might be you're aware of how the temperature feels, you're aware of how any sort of pain or discomfort might be feeling at the moment. You might be aware of the soft rustling of grass or birds. And so what he decides to do is, apparently, once you begin to progress in Buddhism, most people are going to encourage you to do what's called a Buddhist retreat. I've actually done a half-day retreat before, so I could sort of relate to some of the things Dan Harris was talking about, but he did what are becoming more popular, and that are these overnight week-long retreats, where basically you have a little bit of time called a silent retreats, where you have a little bit of time to socialize when you arrive, and then you eat some meals together, but mostly there's no talking for several straight days. And the thinking is that when we're socializing and when we're doing other things, our mind is engaged in moving in so many different directions. And that's what the Buddhists like to call mindlessness, where you're not really aware of what's going on. I think about what Daniel Kahneman says in his book, Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. And he talks about system one and system two, how your brain is really of two minds, how there's a focused brain and then there's an autopilot brain. And apparently we spend the vast majority of our lives in autopilot mode, which is okay. It's part of our evolutionary development of the brain. It's completely necessary. It would be impossible to dream or fantasize about things. Some of the reasons why humans were able to crawl to the top of the evolutionary scale. But the problem is, though, is that when you're in autopilot mode, when you're in mindlessness mode, that's kind of when your brain can begin to run away with itself and cause a lot of internal harm through negative thoughts and negative thinking. And I remember Dan Harris, he quotes, the other book I was reading on mindfulness, where the author was quoting, he was saying that Mark Twain, the great American author, once said that even my worst enemy would not inflict as horrible of thoughts that I seem to inflict on myself. So, getting back to our story here, when Dan Harris decides to go to the retreat, that basically could have had its own story in itself, okay? I mean, it's really hilarious that it has its own narrative arc. He arrives, he's very happy, the food actually turns out to be pretty good, he socializes, he meets some people, and then it becomes silent. Okay. At first, the meditation goes kind of well. He sort of understands what's going on. He thinks it's going to be an enjoyable experience. And then the days begin to drag on. His body gets uncomfortable. He begins to get really sore. He gets anxious. He gets hungry. And he starts having all of these different internal feelings. And he's really miserable. And eventually, he has a breakthrough. He learns to cope. He's able to make it to the end of the week, which he didn't think he was going to. He's blissful. And then he sort of has like a drug come down where the next day after you've been using, you have to face your mundane world again. A lot of people get depressed. That's what happens to Dan Harris as well. But then from that, he winds up to discover that, you know, it's just his mind once again. And he, at the very end, he finds balance in his life, which is at the, well, at the end of the meditation seminar, which is really the whole point. And I think that's what, why I gravitated to this book to begin with. And that is when, if I hear people talk about how a book is going to radically change their life, making you, you know, so much happier than you could ever imagine, I immediately think it's some marketing ploy. But the whole concept of 10% happier, because he says that that's about what, how much happier he thinks he is since starting this trip through Buddhism, is something I can understand and I agree with. And I think that's probably where I'm at as well. I think since practicing meditation and practicing mindfulness, I'm probably about 10% happier. And they're saying that's a pretty good return. I mean, if you're getting 10% return back on your money through your investments, that's pretty good. So that's the, I think that's the whole thing, is that you're trying to be realistic. So, but what I didn't understand before the book is why people do these silent retreats. And Dan Harris explains that all the different things that he was feeling, the pain, the discomfort, the loneliness, the hunger, that there's actually some, that's part of the Buddhist history as well, that Buddha went through the same similar thoughts and feelings as he was experiencing meditation. But that's sort of the whole point of it all, is that you have to begin to understand that thoughts and feelings are exactly that. They're thoughts and feelings. They'll come and they'll go. It goes along with the whole ephemeral nature of existence, that we're here, we're going to experience certain things, and then we're going to die. And that gets to the central tenet of what Buddhism is trying to say, and that is it's okay to understand thoughts and of feelings of happiness and sadness and everything else, but we just have to keep in the back of our mind that they're temporary, and it's our attachment to what we perceive the outcomes will be that's going to make us unhappy. Like, for example, if I think that, you know, I win the lottery, for example, then I will be able to recreate my life, it'll be completely different, and then I will be happy. But the reality is no, you won't. And as a matter of fact, if you read the book by Daniel Gilbert, Stumbling on Happiness, one of my favorite books, you'll see that no, that's not the case. And they've done studies to prove this. They find that people who have won the lottery are only slightly happier than they were before they won the lottery after a couple years. It's because our brain is going to seek novelty, and anything that becomes commonplace for us is what we're going to expect is the norm. It's very difficult to enjoy exactly what it is that you have unless you take time to reflect on these things, which is what Buddhism is trying to say. See, this is where Dan Harris got a little tripped up. He thought that at first that Buddhism trying to become Zen-like was all about not pursuing your goals or not trying to achieve and being ambitious and accomplishing more. And he learns that that's not true. As a matter of fact, Buddha himself was very proud of the monasteries that he built, or the amount of followers that he had, or how he had come so far in his training. It's not striving for the best that you can possibly be that's the problem. As a matter of fact, that'll probably lead to more satisfaction if you're doing that. The problem is how much you're holding on to your attachment, what you feel like, if you're trying to make predictions about what you feel like your life will be like in the future after you've accomplished these goals. That's the problem. That's why, for me at least, I need to be focused on what my goals are, but I can't allow my monkey mind to get a hold of this mythical, fictitious future about what's going to my life will be like after I've accomplished my goals. It's kind of like I was reading a book about how to write a better novel, and I remember the author was talking with one of her seminar students, and the seminar student was talking about how he was looking for validation and fame and popularity, and the author said, "Hey, hold on, let's get the book written first." And that's really, I think, encapsulates how you can combine Buddhism with personal goals and ambitions, is just remember, get the book finished first, okay? And that's what happens with Dan Harris is that he's able, that's how he was able to not lose his edge in the whole very competitive reporting world, is because he realized that it's okay to try to strive for whatever you want. You just have to at all times be aware that your mind is going to run away with itself or sink into mindlessness unless you're actively training your brain not to do it. Okay, sorry that this audio podcast ran a little bit longer than I was expecting it to, but if you made it all the way to the end, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. If you want to learn a little bit more about just an average guy, you want to learn a little bit more about newscasting and that whole business and how it works, then I really think it's a fun read. It's pretty short. Or if you just want, or just a little curious about how you, as just an average person who knows nothing about Buddhism, can kind of make it work at least a little bit for you and possibly be 10% happier, then I strongly recommend the book, 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voices in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works by Dan Harris. That's about all. I don't know what I'm going to be reviewing next, but I will see you guys in a couple weeks. And until then, happy reading. Take care.